We'd like to welcome everyone to the April 16th, 2015 study session. We apologize for the slight delay. We had an important council photograph that had to be taken upstairs. Next, the first item on our agenda.
We laughed at that. Oh, my gosh.
That's appropriate.
It's of our picture, but not important.
First item is to review the agenda for our formal council meeting next Monday. So let's do that. The first items, number three, taking action on contracts. Let me know if you see something. Okay, any questions on agenda item three? If not, number four has to do with resolutions.
Mayor?
Yes, Mr. Brady.
Maybe at the end of reviewing the agenda, we would like to make a presentation on items 4N and 4O.
Okay.
We can do that now.
Okay. Yeah, maybe we'll just see if there are any other questions, and we'll come back to that. 4N and O, we'll have presentations on. J-A-L. M-N. Okay. Agenda item 5 has to do with public hearings on ordinances, planning and zoning recommendations. And then 6 is the taking action on a previously introduced zoning ordinance. Council, any questions or concerns about that? Mr. Brady, why don't we proceed with the staff presentation?
Sure. Invite Mike and Ryan up, please.
Thank you.
Good morning, Mayor and Council members. My name is Mike Kennington. I'm the Chief Financial Officer. With me to my left is Ryan Wimmer, our Deputy Budget Director. I'd like to also recognize our financial advisor, Larry Given from Wedbush, and Kim McIntyre from Gus Rosenfeld are in the audience today as well. On an annual basis, as part of our normal CIP process, we analyze the projects that we have, we size them, and look at the timing of them. With that, we determine the bond funding needs that we have every year, and we come to council to present that to you, and that's what we're here to do today. We'd like to give you guys a quick overview of some of the big projects that are included in this bond package and the timing of those. And so without further ado, I'd like to turn the time over to Ryan to do that.
Good morning. The city typically sells two types of bonds each year. The first is general obligation bonds. General obligation bonds are backed by the full faith and credit of the city. The proposed amount for the 2015 general obligation bond sale is $13.7 million. Dollars, and that is all for parks projects. Some of the parks projects that would be financed with those bonds are the Fiesta Sports Park, Pioneer Park, Southeast Mesa Bike and Pedestrian Path, and the West Mesa Connector. The second type of bonds that we typically sell each year are utility systems revenue bonds. So these are backed by the utility revenue rates that users pay. The proposed amount for the 2015 utility bond sale is $30.2 million. $2.3 million of that is for the electric system, $3.6 million for the natural gas system, and $3.7 million for the solid waste utility. And that's only for the compressed natural gas facilities that we're going to for the use of solid waste, the fleet of vehicles. The bulk of the utility system revenue bonds is for the use of water system improvements. That's $20.6 million of the $30.2 million. That includes design of the new water treatment plant, the Signal Butte water treatment plant that was in the 2014 bond election package, as well as the Val Vista water treatment plant is a large portion of that cost. So the schedule for the 2015 bond sale, on Monday, the council will consider ordering the sale of the bonds. On if the council approves the order of the sale on May 13th, the city would receive bids through a competitive bid process. And on May 14th, we'd be back before council to ask you to consider accepting the winning bid. And on June 4th, the bond issue would close.
That's all we had prepared, so if there are any further questions, we'd like to entertain those now.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
All right. The next item on the agenda is to, we are now beginning the budget process and getting updated and prepared for adopting next year's budget. So, and to start that off, item two is to hear a presentation, discuss, and provide direction on the fiscal year 15-16 utility rate adjustments and the annual budgets for solid waste, energy resources, and water resources. Welcome.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. What we have this morning is kind of a combination presentation where we're going to be discussing the different utility departments. They'll give you some highlights of their operating budget, as well as go over our utility rate recommendations going into the 15-16 fiscal year. So as we go along, I'll be facilitating the discussion as we have the different members of the different utility departments come up and join me for their particular sections of the presentation. Just as an overview, our enterprise fund is made up of multiple individual enterprises within that fund. And what we're talking about this morning is our utility funds or utility enterprises. We manage the fund in a combined manner, meaning when we look at our financial policies and we're looking at to try to keep a reserve balance of 8 to 10%, that's of all of the utilities and all the enterprises combined in one fund. So we manage them individually operationally, but we manage them financially as one fund. One of the things we use that reserve balance for is to make sure that we smooth our rates. We're trying to look for, trying to not have peaks for our customers where we'd have one year that would have to increase the rate significantly. So we always look out for a multi-year period and try to smooth the rates over time. So if we know we have high expenses coming in a particular year, we kind of smooth our rates to build up to that for that particular year. And the reserve balance helps us to do that, to smooth those rates. When we're looking at our targets for next year, we have forecasted both our expenses and our revenues for the different utilities of different enterprises. And in 15-16, we have targeted revenues that we're trying to achieve. So when we look at this, we want to be very clear that when we're talking about the percentage increase here, we're talking about the percentage increase in revenues. And how we implement those into the rates can vary, and the impact to individual customers can vary. Depending on how we implement those. So what we're looking at here is this just gives you an overview of the targets we're looking at for the increased revenues we would need for next year to cover the operations of the utilities. And as a trust, there are different methods of implementation, and how we implement those affect customers differently. So the first area we'd like to talk about this morning is our solid waste department, and I will have Patrick introduce himself and kind of go over his department.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Patrick Murphy. I'm the Interim Solid Waste Director. And today, as Candace stated, we're here to talk about our proposed rate increases. But first, we want to discuss a few of our accomplishments over the last year. We are converting our fleet over to CNG, as mentioned in the previous presentation, which will save us next fiscal year about $300,000 in fuel costs. By the end of this fiscal year, 24 of our 70 fleet vehicles will be CNG fueled. One of the other things we want to talk about was our garbage truck safety program. And with that, we've developed educational videos that run on Channel 11 and an educational program that we make at presentations at both schools as well as city events. And in that, it includes informational flyers, a coloring book, and also child safety vests that we hand out to the children. The other thing is succession planning. Over the last couple of years, we have had an emphasis on succession planning, basically to make sure that we had the flexibility and the ability to continue operations over the years, and we believe we're ready for those future opportunities. The next one is our Clean Sweep, Green Sweep program. Due to our outreach efforts, we've really seen an increase in the use of that program. Basically, it allows the residents another opportunity for how to take care of their solid waste needs. Some points of pride that we want to discuss as well is we are converting to Fleet Mine. And what that is, it's a way to provide real-time service orders and paperless routing, because we're going to have ruggedized tablets in our trucks. And this is going to help us reduce manual production entry, and we plan to go live with that in the second quarter of next fiscal year. Our recycling contracts. We have four companies that we take our recycling to, and basically these contracts provide us with stability for our revenue, and it also gives us a dollar amount for every ton that we take to them goes for an education fee, and that helps us with our outreach efforts to basically inform our residents how to better recycle and that kind of thing. And then with our partnerships, we're always looking for ways to improve our operations, and one of those ways is we work with our neighboring communities, both with the contracts that we've talked about previously with council, the regional landfill contracts. We're also working on ways to improve our efforts with green waste disposal and also household hazardous waste. For next fiscal year, similar to all the other departments, we were asked to make some budget reductions. The following just highlights a few of those. One is diesel fuel savings. As you know, diesel costs have decreased over time, and so we're anticipating that that's going to continue next year, and so we use that as part of our reductions for our barrel replacement program. What that is that's when we replace barrels out that the residents are using. Instead of being proactive with that, we're going to be more reactive to try to save some costs. Obviously, if the barrel's broken, we're going to replace it, and that's what I mean by reactive to that. And then our recycling outreach, as I mentioned earlier, the new recycling contracts that we have has an educational fee. What we're going to use is to offset those funds for our budget, and that's about approximately $23,000 that we'll use next year towards that. As Candace mentioned, we are converting to CNG, and there is a capital investment that we'll be having over the next few years, and we believe we'll have relief in fiscal year 18-19. We talked a few times now about the recycling education outreach program, and then the tools and the technology, and that's, again, the Fleet Mine project that I talked about. Now, for the rate increases, we are proposing a 5% increase for our residential customers. And what that means is a typical resident has a 90-gallon barrel. So the increase is about $1.27 per month for them. And on the slide, it shows that it's basically going from $25.45 to $26.72. We're also proposing an increase to the Mesa Green and Clean fee of 9 cents per month. And again, that's to cover the cost of the additional cost for the HHW. The cost for that has been rising over the years. And then with the Clean Sweep and Green Sweep, with the outreach efforts that we had and the expanded use of that program, there's additional costs that we need to cover with that. And then for our front load rates, we are proposing a 1.2% increase on that. We believe that we'll still be competitive with our competitors, even with this increase. But this helps us cover that net income that Candace mentioned earlier in her presentation. We are not proposing any rate increases for our roll-off rates. We are very close to meeting our 10% net income for that. And with the CNG vehicles that we have for our roll-off vehicles, we believe we're going to be fine next fiscal year. So we're not proposing any rate increases for roll-off. With that, if you have any questions, I'd be happy to answer those.
Council, Mr. Richens.
What's the diesel cost savings number? How much do you anticipate?
We actually use a very conservative number for the budget reduction of about $140,000. Optimistically, we were thinking $300,000 to $400,000, but we want to be a little bit more conservative in our estimate.
How are you able to hedge the diesel fuel costs here? Are we able to store it at a certain cost, or are we going to be relying on market fluctuations? To me, it's worrisome to rely on a diesel fuel savings when, you know, in the market, unless we have a way to hedge against that, if we have a way to, you know, lock in purchase contracts that can guarantee that savings.
We do. Yeah.
Okay, that's what I needed to know. Thank you.
Yeah.
Perfect.
Yeah.
Mr. Luna.
Patrick, do you do the same with CNG in terms of when you purchase CNG, the gas and...
Yes, we have an... for one, the city has the CNG account, you know, we're the provider, and yes, and so we have a contract with them where the diesel is about $3 a gallon, we pay 89 cents a gallon for the CNG.
So we provide the gas to...
Correct.
Yeah,
we sell it to ourselves.
We sell it to the enterprise who pays us back.
And we get a good rate.
Frank is generous. He treats us as a preferred customer. Where do you have preferred customer status?
Preferred
customer.
Right. Thank you, Frank. Yeah, yeah. I take Frank to lunch and then we talk about the things.
I have a question, I think, probably because I'm new here and I know less about this than most people, but I heard you say we have four different recycling contracts.
Yes.
And that there's revenue that's generated from those contracts, and that sounds like that revenue is used mainly for educational purposes. I guess what I'm saying is, well, how much revenue is there? Is it limited to what it costs us to educate people to encourage more recycling, or do we actually produce revenue as a result of recycling?
Mayor, there's two sources of revenue from the recycling. One is we get paid for the recycling materials that we take to those facilities, and then we also get an additional educational fee. The three of the facilities give us $2 a ton for every time we give them a recycling. We get $2 just for the education component. One of the facilities gives us $2.55 a ton, and then we are paid per ton of the recycling. And it varies with each facility, but bottom line is the minimum floor price is about $26 a ton that we get for the recycling. And then the other way we benefit from the recycling program is we save on the landfill cost. So every recycling ton that we take to recycling, we're diverting from the landfill.
And so, Mayor, also, this is a commodity-driven revenue also, depending on kind of the world markets. And
the price of aluminum or price of recycled
cardboard,
paper.
Whatever it might be,
Okay.
Yes. And so when I – thank you, Chris. And so when I said that the minimum floor price – that's because we know the market does fluctuate in our contracts. We got that minimum tonnage because on our one of our contracts that's going to expire in December, that's actually more market-driven. And so we try to steer away from that as much as we could.
So how much revenue do we earn off of the recycling program?
Next fiscal year, I think we're anticipating $300,000 to $400,000.
Do we notice an increase in that when we – encourage recycling, when we publicize? There's nothing we can do to increase those revenues and encourage recycling that we're not already doing?
Mayor, we do see an increase in the recycling effort when we educate our public. There's a couple ways that works. Every 6 months with these facilities, we do what's called an audit. And so they look at what percentage of the materials that are coming in. They also look at how much contamination is in there. And so that contamination is, in our contracts, we're allowed a certain amount, like usually 10 to 12%. When that contamination rate goes up a little bit, then we have to pay the difference of that.
Gotcha.
And so our education efforts help us with that. And then we're also educating our citizens on other ways to divert from the landfill. And that's like with our green waste program. We also have a textile recycling that we started a few months ago with a pilot program that's helping. We see the benefits of that. And our goal is always to improve on how much we divert from the landfills. Right now, for just the Blue Barrel program, it's about 23%. When you count the green, we divert about 30% of our trash.
Which, Mayor, is pretty remarkable for a city our size, frankly. I mean, we always say we can do better. And part of what, as Patrick's saying, is also just trying to educate our residents so they make sure they put the right things in the right barrel. Because by doing that, that helps improve the efficiency of our recycling, but really, as far as the volume of recycling, we do pretty well as a community. but we're always looking for opportunities. And then what drives that is not only volume, but tonnage, but it does also get driven by what the price of that commodity is out in the market. Mm-hmm. So it's a combination of those two things.
Okay, so just so I'm clear, pizza boxes bad, right? Pizza boxes do or don't go in the green mm-hmm. barrel?
Liners are not liners.
Yeah. I think if it's a clean pizza box, right? Yeah. If you got right. the pizza in it, then no.
Sometimes I feel like I'm doing something wrong when I put the pizza box in the blue barrel. Mr. Kavanaugh.
And maybe this is an appropriate time. We always get the question, why don't we recycle plastic bags? Aren't plastic bags part of the contamination issue? And why do recycling centers want to reject them?
The recycling mayor... Vice Mayor Kavanaugh, the recycling centers want to prohibit the plastic bags because the way they sort the recycling when it comes in, it goes through like basically a conveyor belt, and the plastic bags gum that up and then shuts their machine down. And then there's really no return on their investment for that. And so we actually work with the grocery stores. We just had a bench to bag educational program with the schools where the schools collected the plastic bags, and the winner gets a bench that's made out of plastic bags. So we look at alternatives to that. As you probably know, one of the recent legislations that the governor signed was that the cities cannot ban plastic bags, so we're dealing with it as much as we can.
Interesting state issue.
Yeah, right. And Mayor and Patrick, as I recall, your educational effort with those schools, we retrieved a really significant number of bags, correct? In terms of...
Mayor and Vice Mayor Kavanaugh, yes. I don't remember the figure off the top of my head, but yeah, it's a pretty significant number of bags that were collected with all these schools.
Great.
So, yeah.
Great.
Thank you. Next week we'll be awarding the school that won that.
Great.
So, yeah, Sharp. Yeah.
Mr. Finter.
Just a quick observation. I traveled to Southern California quite a bit or recently. I am amazed how far ahead of the game Mesa is when it comes to recycling. It is, compared to the nation, Southern California doesn't have any of the programs. I look at some of the most progressive communities that I've been in, and when I mentioned to some folks what we do here, they're shocked. It is the leading edge of green of what Mesa does, and I don't think we get enough credit for it. So just an observation.
Thank you.
Mr. Kavanaugh, weren't we the first city to have blue barrels in the country?
Ms. Kent can answer that.
Oh, Phoenix was.
Actually, Phoenix.
But we weren't far behind.
Okay. We were one of the first.
And close behind with green barrels.
Back in 1993.
Oh. What have you done for us lately? Really? That's what you're going to point to is 1993 is why? Okay. All right. Well, thank you, I guess. I'm sorry. We digress. Thank you very much.
Okay,
great presentation.
Thanks, guys.
So the next department that we'll review this morning is Energy Resources Department. That includes both the electric and the gas components of our utility programs.
Good morning. Frank McRae, Director of the Energy Resources Department, and also joining me is Hedda Fairbanks, our Senior Fiscal Analyst. And so just to kind of go over some of our recent accomplishments, in 2014 we were awarded the American Public Power Association's first place in their Safety Awards of Excellence program. We went 431 days so far without a lost time accident, so that's a pretty remarkable record. We had a very remarkable record a couple years ago that we unfortunately had an accident that stopped that record, but also just to kind of indicate that we followed up our gold reliable public power provider award in 2012 with the platinum award in 2014. One of the other long-term projects that we've had for quite some time is converting our electrical distribution system from 4,000 volts to 12,000 volts. There's a lot of benefits to this. Mostly it's more energy efficient. But we also took the opportunity to dramatically improve and upgrade our the structural integrity of our poles, our wires, cross arms, those kind of things. So that conversion was actually started about 25 years ago. It didn't make much progress until about 6 or 7 years ago. And with the direction of the city manager to finish that conversion, we can say that we can finally finished it. The last circuit was converted in December of 2014. And then one of the things that we're very excited about is the light rail and some of the transit-oriented development that might arise and develop adjacent to the light rail. So the light rail system has been completed for us in terms of providing electricity to the light rail system, their traction power supply stations, their train stations, platforms, the park and ride lots, et cetera. So those are all ready to go. In terms of what we will emphasize going forward in 15-16, we always emphasize safety, so that'll be a continuing emphasis on trying to minimize any lost time accidents. We also have a streak going on in gas, but really the electric one is the one that we are really focused on. We've also seen some a rash of carpool accidents on certain major thoroughfares. And so as a part of our underground conversion project, one of the criteria that we had listed historically was where we have some traffic accidents. And so working with Transportation Department, we're trying to figure out where those accidents are happening, when are we going to be doing some work in those major thoroughfares, and can we time the work of our underground conversions with those thoroughfare improvements, maybe accelerate a thoroughfare improvement if there's been a rash of carpool accidents. So that's one of the things we're looking at. In terms of reliability, one of the things that happened with our conversion to 12 kV, we took some relatively short circuits and we combined them into a longer circuit. And as a result, when we've had some interruptions in services on those longer circuits, the duration of outages that our customers have experienced have also been extended. So one of the things we're looking at is how to configure our system so that when an outage occurs on a portion of a long circuit, we can minimize, isolate that outage, combine circuits together, and restore service faster. Currently, we serve about meet about 20% of our annual energy requirements with renewable resources. We're looking to enhance that through some additions with solar. We've got a program of where we're working on a conversion of a substation to a pocket park, so we're looking to incorporate some solar into that project, but also we've started working with development sustainability about identifying the city buildings and city facilities in downtown Mason, our electric service area, where we really think now we can pursue some of those opportunities for solar. In terms of the electric rate adjustments, similar to last year, which was the first time we had made a change in our general rates in quite some time, we would propose increasing the service charge component, that fixed amount that doesn't change based upon your consumption. We propose to increase that by $1.50 per month from $6.50 to $8. We think that's a good approach to raise revenue if we have to. It stabilizes the revenues that we do have, so the additional revenue that we're talking about generating, we can feel very confident that that revenue is going to be generated, revenue is going to increase. But it also provides some measure of insulation for our customers that when temperatures get really, really high, their bill won't go quite as high as their consumption does, because the amount of revenue that we generate through the consumption-based charges is lower than it otherwise would be. So for our average residential customer, with the increase from $1.50 per month, their average bill on a monthly basis will go from $89.78 per month to $91.28 per month. And that includes the energy cost adjustment factor, which is a pass-through. We're not proposing any increases to non-residential customer rates. One of the criteria that we utilize to figure out which customers we want to generate revenue from is a comparison with SRP. We're below SRP's residential rates, but we're still moderately higher than SRP on their non-residential, i.e. our commercial rates. One of the other things that we're also doing as a result of some discussions with Councilmember Glover is to develop a low-income residential program for our electric residential customers, as SRP has. And if this is the appropriate time, I'd ask HETA to pass out a little information sheet where we're developing about the program, if that's okay. So as a part of the program, a couple of points of information. We've got about 13,900 total residential electric customers. And like all of our, most of our customers, low-end customers have a significant spike in their electrical consumption during the summer months. Thus, there's an increase in their bill. While our current proposed residential rates, standard residential rates, are still significantly below SRP's standard rate, SRP does have a low-income rate that results in their bills. Those customers of SRP, their bills are quite a bit lower than what our standard rate is. So in consultation with Councilman Glover, we've come up with a proposal for a low-income residential rate for our customers on a pilot basis. So the concept would be we would reduce the electrical residential service charge to zero, so we would essentially waive that charge during the three highest summer months. When bills are highest, that would be their July, August, and September bills. And so those bills are based upon consumption in June, July, and August. With the proposed increase of the rate to $8 per month, we did that from $7.91 to $8 a month so that for the revenue that we would forego as a result of the low-income program, this would essentially mean it's revenue neutral for our electric program. So the money that we would forego, the revenue that we would forego by waiving these customer charges for these customers during the three summer months, we make up for it in the other months with the other customers. We would also implement a tier where they get 80 kilowatt hours per month at zero cost. So that would be essentially about an $8 a month benefit. So the electric bill reduction for a customer that would participate in this program would be about $48 per year. So we propose to do this under what we've like to call a pilot program. There's a couple of reasons why we want to do this. One, it's a fairly different way for us to think about doing business with our customers. So we want to really gain an understanding of what the customer needs are. There are certain customers that have different reasons for having difficulties paying their bill. What we're really trying to focus this program is those customers who are typically low income, fixed income, and they're not frequent and recurring users of things like waiving of bills, going towards the social programs. These are customers that pay their bills. They may fall behind during the summer months because they're on fixed income and they have other obligations that they have to meet. So they're the customers that sacrifice by raising their thermostat so that they can avoid that bill spike as much as they otherwise would. So we're really trying to focus it on those types of customers. And in order to keep the revenue impacts minimal, we're also looking at different ways with which to qualify customers. Maybe we don't essentially audit each application, but we do a sample audit of the applications, and also limit the number of participants to about 125 to 150 customers in the first year, gather that information, and then come back next spring, maybe next winter, with some better information about how this program's worked, looking at how we've qualified customers, how they've been able to keep up on their bills and keep their bills current. So I think I've covered all the bullet points on that sheet.
Mr. Richards.
I like this idea. I think some of our most vulnerable customers live in this utility service area of ours, but they also live in older homes. And I'd be interested, did you guys discuss anything about energy efficiency as part of this? So if we have a homeowner that falls into this rubric here for this discount, we might want to look, how could we bring down their bill in the long term? You know, not just today,
right,
but, looking at, that house and also homes within our electric service area. I mean, we can squeeze a lot of efficiency out if we look. I'm just not sure how energy efficiency can factor into this program. Any thoughts there?
Yes, sir. Mayor, Councilmember Richens, our program in terms of energy efficiency has been driven by what we call our integrated resource plan, which we file with the Western Area Power Administration as a part of our hydroelectric contracts. Our focus has been, historically, at least recently, has been on education and information. Our demographics are fairly different than the rest of the city in our electric service area in that Many of our customers are renters. They're not owner-occupied homes. And so there's a real challenge to be able to get somebody who's a renter to invest in those types of energy efficiency measures. So we really try to provide information to educate those customers about the simple things that they can do to moderate their consumption, which allows them to moderate their bill. Things like turning off lights, using compact fluorescent lights, which not only reduce the consumption for lighting their home, but also reduce the amount of heat that's generated by lights, which they then have to air condition. So those are that's been the focus of our programs for energy efficiency. We've historically looked at doing more aggressive programs like a rebate program, but again, with our demographics of owner-occupied, the minimal number of owner-occupied homes, it really makes it difficult to make the finances, make the economics work on those programs.
I do think as we enroll people in this program, it gives us opportunity to collect some really interesting data as far as that, and that we might want to consider looking at some of the folks that are in this program, if they are indeed homeowners, and even reaching out to landlords, you know, as part of it, to see, hey, if we're giving you this benefit, and there's an energy efficiency, you know, something that we can do in that regards, I think it would help connect them between their high bills. I mean, because I bet a lot of them live in the old houses. They need insulation in their attics. They need that kind of stuff. And I'm not saying proposing that we're going to subsidize that, but there needs to be some kind of response on the customer side that if we're going to give them a benefit because of these bill spikes, that they need to be also on their side evaluating what their usage is and evaluating, you know, how their homes are set up for energy efficiency. So maybe they look at getting their bills down in a holistic way instead of just a discount every year. That way we can extend the program as those houses become more efficient. Maybe we could extend the program to other customers as they develop. So just a thought. Thanks.
Mayor, Councilmember, I think that's a great idea. We'll definitely look at finding a way to incorporate gathering that information into the types of information that we ask for the applicants as a part of their participation in the program. So we'll ask them, what have you done to invest in energy efficiency, and what might you be thinking about, or what's your hurdle for not making that investment in energy efficiency? So I appreciate that recommendation.
That makes a lot of sense to me. But if we're dealing with the most at-risk customers, these might be also the folks that are not capable themselves of doing simple things or recognizing obvious problems. And an energy audit aimed at these 125 customers, if somebody just walked their house, even from the outside, you might see some. I like subsidizing, but I, on the other hand, I don't want to have a big hole in the attic, you know, and those are the folks that we're subsidizing. Let's get involved in helping them. Mr. Yeah. Luna, thank you.
Frank, I think that's a great idea. I know that my aunt participates in the LIRA program through Southwest Gas. I pay her bill. And it's a great mechanism to assist our low-income families. But I was thinking about maybe working in tandem with Tammy Albright and her department. Isn't there some funding mechanism that we can look at, and so that we can bridge that in terms of looking at these homes and seeing if there's ways that we can improve some insulation and those kind of things?
Mayor, Councilmember Luna, we've been in close collaboration with Tammy Albright's programs and the way in which she, the programs that she has, how they're administered, how they help certain customers. And so what we're trying to do is kind of supplement what Tammy's programs that she's administers, what customers that they serve and how they help those customers. We're looking to supplement and do something a little bit different for a different group of customers. But we're definitely looking at how she qualifies applicants, the criteria that she uses, and how those programs work so that we're not duplicating those efforts.
Big supporter of the approach and what we're doing. It triggers a memory of in the old days in the frontline emergency medical service in the downtown area, going in on the elderly, fixed income, patient that has tried their best either through evaporative cooling or fans, but living in a sweltering situation. Now they're dehydrated. They're drawing the most expensive services now the city has to provide in emergency medical, transport, stabilization at a hospital. These are real things that happen out there in the community. I think sometimes people just don't understand what we have to deal with. And so great idea to try and help and support that most vulnerable population up front. And there's a dollars and cents savings in the long run in some emergency services. So thank you.
Thank you.
I'm sorry. I apologize. Something you said earlier, I meant to ask you about the light rail. Does the city of Mesa, are we the electrical provider for light rail in downtown?
We are. They will be building three what's called TPSS or traction power substations in our electric service territory. There's one on kind of the
I've seen them.
The west and east.
Yeah.
The west and east boundary, and then one also at Morris Plaza.
Right.
And so those are in our electric service territory. They are essentially physically disconnected from the other parts of the system, but as an example, if a substation that's serving the easternmost part of the route that's served by SRP goes down, then our substation that's serving their traction power substation on the west end of our system can serve the trains that are operating in that area. So there's a very high reliability to the train system from having multiple substations serving multiple parts of the system.
Okay, so SRP has the far end of the service territory, and we have the downtown, kind of similar to, I guess, just the regular areas that SRP and the city would have. Yeah.
On Main Street, our eastern boundary is Stapley, and our western boundary is Extension.
So do we charge a standard commercial rate, or are they a preferred customer as well?
In this instance, they're on our standard commercial interdepartmental or intergovernmental rate.
Great. So we want to encourage people to ride the light rail as much as possible, right?
Yes, sir.
That's right. Okay. Mr. Richens.
Are you about to the end of your presentation? I didn't want to interrupt if you had. I just have another question when it's at the right spot. But I noticed in the staff report you talked about growth in the system related to gas and electric. And I think you noted about 80 accounts anticipated growth. What's the development project associated with those 80 accounts?
There's not the way we project on our electric system, unless we know of a specific customer developing or a specific project developing, it's just kind of an econometric. Here's what we've seen recently. Here's what we think the investment's going to be in the downtown area. So this generates a certain level of customers. So I wouldn't be able to point out a specific customer or all 80 of those customers specifically. But as an example, the reuse of the Sunkist plant would be one of those customers that's one of the 80 that's going to become. So we try to take into account the discrete developments we know about, but then we also try to estimate, here's what we think we're going to add based upon recent trends.
Yeah, I know. I think Encore is doing a second phase, and there's that. I was just kind of wondering, because that's actually was kind of exciting to see 80 account growth in our electric system. So I kind of was wondering how you got to that. So thanks.
You bet. Moving on to slide 15, so the proposed service charge is $8. You can see the comparison there with where SRP's charges are after their new rates that were implemented in April of this year. For the calendar year of 2014, our average customer's bill was about almost $9 less than if served by SRP. That's about a 10% difference. For that smaller first quartile customer, it's more like about 16% difference. Moving on to the gas side, the American Public Gas Association has developed a program that's very similar to the Reliable Public Power Provider, or they call it the SOAR program. We won the Gold Award, which is the highest level in the APGA approach. And then we've also won an award for our Key Accounts program as a part of the Gas Association's Growth, Marketing, and Sales Award. Probably the one area that I think we can be most proud about in 14-15 is our underground damage prevention program. This includes the Blue Stake and 811 program. the education of contractors and our citizens, customers, about the need to dial before you dig. Our success in having prevention of damage to our underground facilities is quite remarkable. The results of our program is that our damages per 1,000 locates, that's the measure they use, is about 1/16 of what that national best practices standard is. So we have a lot to be proud of in that regard. And then as a part of our capital improvement program, we've done things like add supervisory control and data acquisition devices and equipment communications to our pressure regulator stations, which allows us to keep a more thorough look at what's happening in our system and what issues might be arising as conditions change. Looking forward to 15-16, Patrick Murphy talked a lot about developing the CNG stations for the solid waste CNG fleet. So those stations will also be able to be used for other departments to use vehicles. Certainly the priority for those stations will be the CNG vehicles, but we have acquired 6 new CNG trucks and energy resources. As a part of that program, we've made filings with the Internal Revenue Service, and we've actually got a rebate from the federal government for our historical use of compressed natural gas. So we're looking to find other departments that are looking to buy CNG vehicles, and we'll use some of that IRS rebate to offset some of the additional costs that are incurred up front to purchase a CNG vehicle. And then as we've learned a lot about CNG stations, with the temporary station and the development of the permanent stations for solid waste, we're going to take that knowledge and that experience and apply it to building a CNG station over at the East Valley Institute of Technology. We hope to start moving more vigorously on that in 15-16. One of the other programs that I think we have a lot of pride about is our succession plan. Right now, we've got about 20% of our employees participating in the succession plan. Several of our most recent vacancies have been filled with internal applicants that have greatly enhanced their qualifications over the last couple of years through our program, where we put them in programs for developing their management skills, communicating with the public, getting into a tuition reimbursement program to enhance their formal education, and also identifying and developing internal training programs for them. So our rate recommendations is to increase our service charge. Again, that notion of that's the more stable source of revenue, and it also insulates our customers somewhat from what might happen in the wintertime. If we have an inordinately cold weather snap, their bills will spike because their consumption spikes. Well, if we increase the revenue based on that customer charge, there's some insulation towards that bill spike. So our residential customers in the summer, their charge will go from 1082 to $12.11 per month, and in the wintertime they'll increase from $13.75 to $15.04. So our average residential customer bill will increase from $33.55 to $34.84 a month. So managing our proposed, so we came up with some adjustments that exceeded the 5%, but one of the things we're doing as a part of managing some of our budget changes is that pilot program for a low-income electric residential program with trying to make that revenue neutral. We've also offered up 8 total positions in the Energy Resources Department, 4 on the electric side, 4 on the gas side. These are more field positions as a result of some changes in our workloads, managing our operations, managing our crew structure. We feel like we can offer up these 4 positions and save some money there. And then we've had a miscellaneous group of adjustments where our utilization of equipment has gone down. We're able to reduce overtime, and we've had some reductions in things like memberships, outside materials, and some other efficiency improvements that we've made in the department.
Frank, you should mention that those are vacant positions?
Those are currently vacant positions, and so there would not be any reduction in force associated with it. So those are positions that have been vacant for some period of time. We feel comfortable that we can move forward without filling those. In some instances, we've hired temporary employees to perform some of that work, but with the types of projects we've completed, we feel like we can go forward without that funding.
Thank you very much, Council. Any questions? Mr. Thompson.
Frank, are we looking at any time in the future moving to smart meters down in the Magma Gas area? So I think it'd make it easier, I think, on reading as that area starts expanding.
We've got a continuous team that continuously looks at smart meters, not only for gas down in Magma, but because we have three metered utility services over different parts of the city. We've looked at it in the downtown area. The issue has been the cost of the communication system for that small number of customers down there makes it still hard to make the economics work. I think it's getting close. It was getting really close when gas prices were over $3 a gallon because those meter readers make two or three trips down there a month and drive a lot of miles, and they spend a lot of time on the road going back and forth with Magma. Now that gas prices are much lower, it's really difficult to justify the conversion to smart meters.
Thank you. Mr. Luna.
Just real quick, Frank, are we extending or maybe making an offer to Mesa Public Schools or to Maricopa Colleges relative to your CNG program?
We have approached Mesa Public Schools. They have a preference right now for propane for their non-diesel vehicles. We've been in continuous communication with them, trying to explain the virtues and the benefits of compressed natural gas. We think it's safer. We think it's a more domestic product. It's a cleaner fuel, we think. But to this date, they've been pursuing the propane approach. In terms of the station at the East Valley Institute of Technology, we're really trying to identify the fleets that are in close proximity to that would-be facility, such as the school district's distribution warehouse across the street from the proposed location. So we are making those outreaches. I don't think we've put Maricopa Community Colleges on the radar, so we'll have to make that overture to them.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
Our next and final department for this morning is Water Resources Department, which encompasses both the water and the wastewater utility enterprises.
Good morning, Mayor and Council. I'm Dan Clevenger, Director of Water Resources. I'll jump right into some of our accomplishments from fiscal year 14-15, our current year. Undoubtedly, you've all been by the intersection of Lindsay and Brown. You've seen north of there. We've got a large transmission main project has just been completed. That was phase one of a three-phase project costing $47 million. We'll be bringing large quantities of water from the Val Vista treatment plant operated by the City of Phoenix but co-owned by the City of Mesa. We'll deliver that water to three large reservoirs for further distribution. It's 8 miles in total, that project. Right now, phase two is underway in construction, and phase three will follow on the heels and be complete in April 2017. These are huge lines. These are 72 inches down to about 42 inches, so it carries an awful lot of water. So that's one success.
Just real quick, Dan, I just wanted to compliment you and the department for the exceptional job you've done with outreach. I have not received a single email or phone call from an angry constituent, and that line runs right through my district. So well done, and please pass on to the team that you work with on that, that they've done an excellent job keeping people in the loop. And I know that there's been hiccups along the way, but just really appreciate the great job that everyone's done on that.
Thank you. Engineering led that effort. They conducted public meetings, and some of us were there, but they did a really great job. One other element here on this slide of accomplishments was an IGA. This IGA took 7 years of negotiating. It was very difficult. It was before my time, but I understand it took a long time. And we say on the slide it's $1.6 million in savings. It's really new revenue. We are treating their wastewater. And we cleaned up in fiscal year 13-14 some of the back charges. But this current fiscal year is the first one where we had planned treatment and appropriate payment for those. So we're on track now. So we have a new revenue stream by treating the Salt River Pima Maricopa Indian Community wastewater. One third item, we're showing we expect to have $4 million in savings at the end of this year. We have savings from the Val Vista Water Treatment Plant, our joint venture that I just referred to, and then SHROG, which is the sub-regional operating group. That's the 91st Avenue plant, which we are partners in. That one's also operated by Phoenix. So they've got, we had a little bit lower flows than forecasted and some increased efficiency at the plants. In addition to that, in our Mesa plants, we've had savings in energy and chemical costs. We continue to use off-peak electric when we can. We have some optimization at our plants. And then at Brown Road, we've been experienced for the last several years a very good quality raw water, which requires less chemicals to treat, so we have savings there as well. Regarding our areas of emphasis on the next slide, some of our priorities, of course, with the bond election, we've got a lot of investment coming in Southeast Mesa. We are currently in design for the Signal Butte Water Treatment Plant. That's a 24 million gallon per day facility. That could be online as early as summer of 2018. In addition to that, that plant will have additional wells, pumps, raw water main from the CAP canal and transmission mains. Our other big investment in Southeast Mesa will be the Greenfield Water Reclamation Plant. We'll virtually double the capacity. We're partners with the town of Gilbert and town of Queen Creek on that facility, but only Gilbert and Mesa will be participating in this expansion of 14 million gallons per day. Just this week, the town of Gilbert passed their on City Council passed the DCR, so they'll be moving forward with the DCR and committing money for preliminary design on that facility.
I'm sorry.
Design. What did I say?
DCR.
Oh, a design concept report, preliminary design.
Preliminary.
Yes.
Leave your quarter at the table.
Yeah.
I'm sorry. Just to back up a little bit, we operate that facility similar to the way Phoenix operates.
Exactly.
The facility in our.
We have three partners. Okay. We will become the major partner as far as flow, but we've been operating it from the inception.
And then you're right. So the but the Val Vista Phoenix operates, and we're a partner. We're the stakeholder owner.
We're the primary operator of the facility, even though it's located in the town of Gilbert.
That's correct. True.
Okay. And so their approval of the DCR.
The preliminary design.
That's just, they don't have primary responsibility for the design. They're just signing off on the design.
Right. That we're contributing. And committing their dollars.
Oh, yeah. Got it.
We are the lead.
Thank
City
you very much.
City Mesa's the lead.
I get it.
Another item, areas of emphasis for next year. We've done a great job this year on our sanitary sewer overflows. We call them SSOs. We had increased focus on our sewer line cleaning and maintenance. These are really unpleasant events and, you know, cause claims to the city. In a collection system like ours, the national standards typically one SSO per 100 miles of pipe. We have 1,600 miles of pipe, so you can anticipate up to 16 incidents. We've only had two so far this fiscal year, so that's really, really good. Our crews are doing a great job maintaining. So we're gonna do that, extend that effort into 15-16, and hopefully we have the same results. Regarding odor control improvements, our focus this current fiscal year was largely on our plants, the Northwest plant near Riverview Park, and our Greenfield plant as well. We're going to extend those efforts to the collection system, so we have a comprehensive study underway, and most of it will be in the next fiscal year. So we'll be analyzing what's happening in our sewer system, our collection system, to mitigate odors in that as well, to minimize complaints that we have. Last item on the areas of emphasis for next year is water meters. So we have a Our staff in Water Resources created and is currently testing a meter inventory control system. I'd say we probably in the past didn't do a great job at tracking all of our meters. We will be able to, with this system, know exactly where every single meter is at any given time during its life cycle. We have a 15-year replacement cycle, and we replace 7,000 to 10,000 meters per year. We'll be able to count for meters upon delivery and check them into our inventory. It'll track everyone that's checked out by field staff. We'll record when a meter is installed at any given property, and then we'll account for any meters that are removed and retired as well. Regarding large meter replacement, we've got some large meters out there that are over 40 years old, and as they age, they get less and less reliable, and they slow down inevitably, and so that's less revenue. So it's very important that we stay on top of those. We're going to continue expanding our vault rehab project and we'll be replacing those aging meters using in-house staff. So when they age, like I mentioned, they slow down. And we've got commercial and industrial meters that make up only 20% of our meters, but that's 80% of our revenue. So it's very important that we stay on top of those. Next slide talks just briefly a little bit some of our budget highlights for 15-16. We're going to see some a little bit of increase in our water purchase costs. It's due primarily to CAP, Central Arizona Project. Their rates are climbing a little bit. We're going to see, we get about 80% of our water, our expenditures for water to CAP. We spend about $11 million total. And we expect increases about $2.4 million or $2.5 million over the next 4 years beyond 14-15. So that's something we ought to stay on top of. We expect, and this is good news, a minimal increase in our chemical budget. We recently reorganized our chemical contracts. We've joined a cooperative purchasing agreement with several Valley cities and school districts, so we get lower unit pricing now. So that's an advantage for Mesa. Our wastewater side is probably only going to go up a little over $100,000, and on the water side, our chemical use will remain about the same as it did this year. Similarly, our energy costs are going to go up a little bit. We've had a 5% rate increase from SRP. We do continue to take advantage of our off-peak rates. We do everything we can off-peak. We have our joint ventures. We mentioned the Val Vista plant and the 91st Avenue plant, the SHROG, Sub-Regional Operating Group. Continued optimization of the plants has helped us to decrease our costs. And what's happened over the past several years, frankly, is we overpay and then we get reconciliation, we get a refund. We're having more realistic estimates now, so I think what we pay on a monthly basis will be a little closer to the actual, and we won't, kind of like we do with the IRS, hopefully, we plan to keep it kind of close so we don't have to pay a whole bunch at the end or get too big a check, you know. So that's how we handle that. One other item, we do propose 4 new positions. With that large capital work we're going to be doing over the next 4 to 6 years and beyond, we've got a lot of work in the field. We have a need to monitor and stay on top of these nearly $500 million worth of projects. So we're proposing a senior civil engineer on the water side, and we would like to upgrade a current vacant position to a senior civil engineer on the wastewater side, so one for each side of our program, one for each of our programs, and a construction inspector. Again, staying on top of all these projects that are going in the field. The fourth position is a water quality inspector related to backflow. So this position is very important to protect our water system, make sure there's no pollutants introduced. So we are trying to increase our compliance on these required annual inspections of all the backflow devices out in the field, and we'd be collecting some fines, so that would largely offset the cost of that individual who would be responsible for that. Last bullet on that slide talks about rates.
Do you mind if I ask a quick question?
Sure.
About that? It makes perfect sense to me that we're starting a huge construction cycle for water, wastewater. It makes huge sense that we need additional city staff to oversee those that $500 million investment. And that will be the case clearly for the next few years as those projects are being completed. I just wondered, long term, does it make sense to add 4 positions that are clearly needed now and will be needed for the next few years? Will that need dissipate 4 or 5 years from now, and would we have been better off getting a temporary consultant type position rather than buying into 4 new pensions that may not be needed long term?
First crack at it.
Yeah.
These positions, those first 3 I mentioned, would be funded through the capital improvement program. We have a need right now, frankly, or I think we're overstretching right now the amount of work we have for our limited staff. We have a very small engineering group within Water Resources, and we work very closely with Beth's group in our centralized engineering office. So there'll be needs, I would offer, there'll be needs well beyond this 4 to 6 years to spend this current bond election, but we have a bond cycle, so we'll be out regularly, I hope, generating capital to continue to make improvements in the system. So I think these folks would be well utilized.
But Mayor, to your point, every year we evaluate the positions. If the capital program, so what we're saying here is the dollars that come from the bonds, the revenue bonds, these folks, since they will be completely dedicated to projects related to the capital improvement program that are being funded by bonds, that's how their salaries will be met. However, each year we'll evaluate, and certainly upon we are going into a pretty large peak, a large activity with both the water treatment plant and the wastewater treatment plant. So we will have to evaluate whether all positions that are being charged to our bond program continue to be justified based on the level of construction activity. If they don't, we won't have the capacity to just move them over into the operating side. So we'll make those adjustments as we go along. 3 to 4 years, we typically would see quite a bit of turnaround anyway in other inspector positions, so I think we would be able to absorb those as we needed to. But the kind of check on this is that these positions, as they're being budgeted, will only be identified as being funded by capital dollars, by bond dollars. So if those projects aren't in the pipeline 4 or 5 years from now, and the projects aren't there, then we'll either have to find a vacant position in the operating side, or we'd have to make elimination of those positions.
Thank you. Mr. Finter.
And remind me, since the Great Recession, what you've been operating on is we're going to keep a solid core group of government employees, and then on the surges that we kind of temp employees, and then when it wanes, we don't have to go through that horrible process of rifting employees and ruining lives. So,
thank you. Yes, I still have the scar tissues from the recession, so we will be very sensitive to that. We monitor that, especially development services is an area where sometimes we see this ramping up peak of activity. We always have to keep reminding ourselves these are all cyclical in nature, and just as doing major water treatment plant expansions and wastewater treatment plants expansions are also cyclical. So we will have a 3 to 4 year period. We'll see at the end of these projects, we can monitor those. And if we need to hold positions in other places to make sure we can backfill them, we'll be positioned. These positions that we're talking about are not unique. We have several of these positions in the organization, so we'll be able to manage that as we get closer to the completion of these projects.
Thank you. I'm sorry. Proceed.
No problem, Mayor. At this point, I'll kind of transition over to Candace to talk a little bit about our proposed rate increases and then the realignment of our residential water tiers.
So when we look at our water utility rate structure, one of the things that we're bringing to you this morning is not just coming in and talking about rate increases. What we've done over the last couple of years in the city is we've been looking at the different aspects of the water structure of the rates. And over the last couple of years, we've been focused on that service charge and fixed costs, with a goal for the city that we get our target is that our fixed revenues are about 35 to 40% of our costs, rather than it being on the variable. Water utility is a very infrastructure-heavy utility. And whether the consumption goes up and consumption goes down, the cost of that infrastructure remains the same. And so we want to make sure that our rates were stable, that our revenues were stable in order to meet those costs. We feel that coming into the 15-16 fiscal year, we've now met that goal. So over the last couple of years, when we've done the rate increases, they've been a little bit more toward the fixed service charge rather than the consumption in order to meet those arrangements. So going into 15-16, we think we're good. We're about 36.3% is where we think we'll be at our fixed revenues as a percentage of our total cost for the water program. Where we looked this year is now to start focusing on the consumption portion of the utility rates or the water rates. Our consumption portion has really declined over time. As people have more efficient, houses are more efficient than new homes that are going into. We have more efficiency programs that they're doing. People are just more aware of conservation and so forth. And so we're seeing our accounts are increasing, but our consumption per account is decreasing. And so it's really just changing the way people are using the service, the water services. So what we did is we took a look at how people are actually using water services and what are their consumption patterns and are there changes or are there differences between consumers. The way we have our water structure today is a three-tier structure. And it's based on the demands that those particular customers place on the system itself, on the demand for infrastructure, the demand for consumption of the utility. When we looked at the actual consumption, and there's a graph here that we can take a look at, When we took a look at the actual water utility accounts or customers, we saw that there isn't one type of a water customer. There's actually four or five different types of water customers. And those customers actually place different demand on the system itself. So if you look at that bottom line on your graph, that black line there, you can see that most of our water bills, so these are not customers, but monthly bills, almost 77% of our monthly bills, the consumption varies between that kind of 5,000 to 9,000 gallons a month. So they don't have a lot of variation between summer and fall. We're looking at a five-year time period here. So you can see they're very consistent in their water usage. They're very consistent in their demands that they place on the water infrastructure. But if you, as you look at some of the other lines and some of the other consumers, we have consumers out there who are very volatile in what they're consuming when it goes between summer and winter. And so the demand, if you look at the purple line up there at the top, you can see that the demand that some of these customers place on the infrastructure in those summer months is very great and very different than the demand that they place on in the winter months. And so as we trying to align those, the blue lines across the graph are showing you where our current tiers are or our current levels of demand. So the first, and those, there's different pricing for those different levels to try to make sure that we are aligning the demand for the service with the cost of providing that service. And so those are where we are, those are where the levels are right now. Now, these levels were created a long time ago, these demand levels, and back, the demand level for our average bill used to be about 12,000 gallons a month, then moved to the average to be about 10,000 gallons a month, and now we're down to the average is about 7,000 gallons a month. So we're looking at our average bill that goes out to a customer is about that 7,000. So you can see the consumer behavior has changed over time. What staff is recommending?
What's the time period for that from going to 12 to 7,000? Is that
over 30 years period? It was about 30 years ago, and I think it fell to less than 10, the average. The median is close to 7 now, but over 30 years, median, it dropped over 25% in 30 years.
Yeah, and that's pretty consistent with what's getting reported across the valley, that we're serving more customers with the same amount of water that we had many, many years ago. So
yes.
So
that's accounts are going for
account number. That's fascinating.
So what staff is recommending for this year is that we actually realign the tiers to better align with that consumption pattern, that consumption behavior of our customers. So on the next slide here, you can see the red lines are the proposed new demand level tiers for the water utility structure. And you can see that maybe aligns with what your typical, your median kind of usage down there at the bottom would align with that first tier or level. And they would kind of align a little bit better with what they're actually using. Leave that up there for a minute.
Is this the proposed tiers after your 5-year period?
Yes. Yeah. Okay. So that's my next one. Right. What the data shows is that this is really where the demand tier should be today. We understand that this is not something you can move to in 1 year because it would be a great impact on some of our customers. So we're actually recommending a 5-year phase to go from the tiers where they are today to the tiers where they really should be based on the demand services.
Okay. I mean, are you going to put that up on a chart or anything?
Yes, I am.
Okay. We'll talk about it when you get to this.
Okay.
Oh, here you
go. So this is at full implementation, this is where the new tier or demand levels would be, are being recommended to move to. So the top one is our current residential tier structure how it is today versus our proposed tier structure at full implementation. But we are recommending that they implement over 5 years to allow customers, one, to understand and to plan if they need to do some financial planning for this, and also, two, so they can take a look at their water usage and assess their water usage to see if there is something they can do to reduce that or to look at leaks within their house, pool usage, how often they, you know, redo that and so forth. So it gives the customers a little bit of time to kind of assess their water usage and make choices. It is a 5-year implementation is what we are suggesting. What this shows you here is kind of over these 5 years. The first column is where they are today. You can see, remember, up to the first 3,000 gallons are included in the service charge or the base rate, so there is no variable charge on those. The green area would be your Tier 1 demand. Yellow would be Tier 2, and blue today is Tier 3. As we move forward through the phasing into the new levels, you'll see that new orange come in, so that we'd end up with four demand levels that would better match the behavior of the consumers. What this shows here is the monthly bill amounts as it goes forward, but the next one I can show you the impact. That's what we want to kind of focus on a little bit this morning. Is this is the first, the left side of the slide shows you the variation in the bills due to the moving each year. The other thing that we've done, as you recall, we smoothed the rates. So everything we're looking at here is assuming a 5% increase on the variable, on 5% increase on the rates in each year that we're looking at. So you're looking at a combination of not only phasing in those demand tiers, but also adding 5% each year. What would the effect be or the impact to the customer? So the left-hand side shows you the actual dollar amounts per monthly bill. The right side shows you the impact of their of that monthly bill. So you can see, and if 56%, if we went back to the other slide, about 56% of the bills would still be in Tier 1, the first level of demand. And if you look at their, the impact for those are 5% each year. So they match what the increase in the, our recommended increase in the rates themselves. So we're recommending a 5% increase in our rates over the next few years. The impact to these Tier 1 customers would be 5% on their bills.
Each year.
Now, this is different from last year. Last year when we came back, we were recommending at that point that we would need a 7% increase on our rates over the next few years. But due to realigning the demand levels with the behavior of the consumers, we're able to only have to recommend a 5% rate increase. Now, as you go into the other tiers, you can see that there's a slightly higher one. They range between 6 to 8% impact as we move. Once you get to full implementation in year 5, you'll see that they start to level out. If you look at year 6, now everybody's back onto that 5% impact. Because they're just going based on the rates now. We're not changing, no longer changing the tiers because we fully implemented them.
So, Candace, part of what you're accomplishing here is we're trying to bring more people up based on their usage into that higher tier, gradually recognizing that we haven't been really capturing the full cost of that variable rate. You know, those charts you saw at the top, where we were catching a very narrow band at the top on the higher users.
Yes.
We're really broadening that, kind of sliding that down. But also on the bottom side, though, we're also suggesting that that needs to drop further, so it'll make sure that more people are kind of fall into that lower tier than we have today. Or, well, the lower tier becomes more balanced with the other two tiers. Right now we have kind of a very dramatic tier system, and here we're trying to give really our customers more options as far as how they can manage their water usage and which tier they want to fall into. So it gives the option at the lowest end to be kind of your, as Candace was saying, we're trying to identify, you know, you, when you look at your kind of, I'm not sure what term we use anymore, but what you use just to kind of keep your household going, and the winter rate, that kind of represents there's not a lot of outdoor usage. And so the thought is that's kind of your life, on the short term,
sustaining rate,
that consumption of water. And then at the very high end, where you see these big spikes during the summer months and when there's a lot more outdoor usage, you see there's customers who have either large yards or pools or other uses for water that are outside the home, you'll see those bigger spikes. And then we're going to create this other kind of tier in between. They give people who might may want to manage some of that outdoor usage, but they still want to enjoy maybe, you know, green yards during the full year, maybe a summer pool usage and whatever. So we're trying to kind of give people more options than they have today. Today, our number is so, it's very skewed, as you can tell. It's based on a modeling that that's existed for years, and we're trying to take now that perspective of where usage is going today, where the new homes are coming in, and try to help emphasize to them that they can get a lower rate and stay in that lower tier if they manage their water, really kind of more for indoor use focus. And then if you want to enjoy the outdoor usage of water benefit, then you have those other two options above that. Now, recognizing we're trying to change a formula, a methodology that's been around for a long, long time. That's why we decided to try to bring this over, have this happen over a five-year period. We'll continue, and I think this gives us even more emphasis in our water conservation education, because in the past it's been, you know, you can save water, it's important. We live in the desert, that's important. This also kind of gives us the opportunity to give a message of where you can fall as far as how it impacts your bill, probably more so than we've had in the past, to really differentiate the different types of usages.
Mr. Luna.
Hi, Candace. How are you going to educate the community? I know SRP sends me a scorecard, I think, every month in terms of where I am and then where other users are. Are you going to be doing something similar to that? Are you going to roll that kind of education plan to our community?
I think if we have supportive council to go forward with this, then we'll be our group. We'll have a team that's working on this, and our team will get back together to start working on the educational factor of it, how to phrase it, how to get it out to the residents. One thing we want to make sure that we're very clear that when we're communicating utility rate increases, we did have some issues last year with when we put more emphasis on the service charge, that people were not clear on the impact. It was communicated there was a 7% increase, and that wasn't necessarily the impact to those customers. So we want to be very sensitive to that this year and make sure that we're very clear. So we do have a cross-departmental team that works on this when it comes to water rates. And so we'll get that team back together and kind of put together some education and so forth so that we're ready to go as they go into place.
Mr.
And
Richard.
One other thing I would like to mention is just to make clear that when we're talking about these tiers, the customers are only paying the differential on the volume that goes into that next tier. So everybody pays the same amount. For example, where we are today at the 11,000 gallons, every customer pays the same amount of money for that first 11,000 gallons. The additional, that new rate is only on the next 1,000 gallons as it goes up. So and these are based on bills. And so some people might be in tier one and with one bill, and the next month might go into tier two a little bit.
The issue I've had for years, and I know I was going to use the metaphor broken record, but I realized most of our younger staff probably don't know what that is. So CD, I don't even know if that works. MP3, I don't know, whatever.
A virus.
Fixed charges.
Yes.
We pushed to, 36% mm-hmm. of recovery. I've always, since I've been here, advocating for recovering more of our fixed charges and putting that recognition on the customer that, you know, you say they're here for 6 months a year and they leave for 6 months, that they recognize that they do want pipes hooked to their house when they come back. You know, because a lot of customers still continue to think that they should be able to turn their accounts off for 6 months and they're not using any water, therefore they should pay nothing. But they don't recognize. And so I want to push, and I've been pushing for many years, that 36% is not enough, not even close. We need to be more 75% to 100%, not 36%. I feel it's far too low. And I appreciate what you're doing with rates. I think it's the right approach, and phasing it's a good idea. And I had some questions about that, but the way you explained it, it helped me understand where you're headed. But I still think we need to push at least the 50% this year on those fixed charges. People need to understand that the debt that's associated with our system, the infrastructure and the repairs that need to happen continually, and the fact that those pipes need to be hooked to their house 12 months a year, not just six. And I have sympathy for and I appreciate our part-time residents, I really do. But this is across the board for everyone. We need to get far closer. And do you have the number? What's the fixed? What would you have to if we had a fixed charge per month that recovered 100% of our debt and infrastructure and all those things, the non-wet stuff, what would that number be?
I don't have that with me today.
It's higher.
You should
it's
always
higher.
Be prepared yes. with that it's number because you know I'm going to ask.
I know.
So, Councilmember Councilmember Richards, here's where we're asking for your help, because we know that you've pushed that, and we have this conversation every year. Because certainly,
sorry.
Not only, no, it's great. It's a great conversation. And we have addressed it. And with your urging, we have, you know, we've increased that significantly. Yeah. And it's been very helpful because not only does it help to recognize the real types of costs, category of costs that are in the utility operations that are related to debt, as you mentioned, they're fixed. And it provides a lot more stability in our rate system that we can rely upon because we know it's a fixed cost. This year, though, what happened is as we were looking at our rates, and the message was pretty strong that Dan brought to us is how this pattern of consumption has really changed throughout the city, and especially we see it in a lot of the new subdivisions that are coming on. The water conservation, the appliances, all of that is pretty dramatic. And here's where we were, is that we just felt like every year when we make changes in our rate formulas and methodology, it's very, we have to spend a lot of time, as just mentioned here, really educating the public. And we just felt like maybe this was the year that if we could just spend this year really focusing on this idea of the tiers. And we were worried if we did that and another increase in the fix, it's just, we were trying to keep the message simple. But I think that's, we just kind of, maybe we got a little concerned.
I get
concerned,
that. But aren't our tiers costs far lower if we're, because we're blending.
They could be.
We're recovering the other, mm-hmm. doing the math, 64% in this rate structure. So, I mean, what we pay for the wet stuff every month would be far lower if we recovered.
Listen.
More. And I think $55 was the number. $55 was the number.
It's up there pretty high, yeah.
Conversation.
Would you like us? Would you like us look at adding a little bit more to the fixed cost, but still having going in this direction?
Well, I think we should model it. So we have something to look at. So we, you know, give it to us at 50%.
Okay.
I know it's a lot of work, but hopefully you can manipulate the spreadsheets pretty easily. But, you know, what does the fixed charge look at 50%? What does it look at like at 75% and 100%? And what does that do to our bill variance? Because you're 100% right that the there's a change in the way people are using the wet stuff. And that's a good thing. And I think we can drive a lot more conservation response if people's what they're paying for the water itself is directly tied to their usage. Right now it's not, and so you don't have that demand response. It's hidden. And we need to unmask that demand response so people can understand what that's like. So, you know, if we're going to push the fixed charge up to 50 or 75 or 100%, what does the rate structure on this side need to look like to recover what our purchases are on the water markets? And I think that gives us, in the long term, some flexibility in the water market when we go out and acquire a resource.
Fair enough. We were just trying to keep it simple this year, but we can absolutely.
I mean, I'm
that.
Just one guy.
No, that's fine. And we can give you the spreadsheet and see what the numbers look like.
Yeah,
but so important. This tier was very important to us this year that we wanted to bring because it's so different than the way we've been operating for years. But it's the world has changed, and we see the usage is so much different, and we wanted to recognize that.
Yeah, and I think we need to kind of do this in preparation of shortage calls on the Colorado River. If that gets into the M&I, the municipal industrial pool, and we start seeing dramatic increases in our cost of CAP water, the other thing that we might need to look at is on-project, off-project pricing within the city, where we have half of the city on CAP water, we have half of it on SRP, and there's a difference in the cost of acquiring both of those wet commodities. And, you know, looking at that, you know, that even drives revitalization. Is it cheaper to use water in the SRP zone than in the CAP zone? So
sure.
Those are all things that I think we need to continue to consider when it comes to water. But anyway, I'd just love to see that modeling if my colleagues are comfortable with seeing that too.
To me that makes sense because I think when I'm out talking to the public and they say why are the water rates increasing, I think part of my explanation is, well, thank you for voting for the wastewater and water treatment plants. Those are huge capital expenses, not tied to the commodity but tied to the capital, and so it makes sense that we are increasing rates to cover that $500 million bond that you approved for us, which is not the wet stuff, it's the pipes.
And that may be the five-year program is how we ratchet the fixed charge from where we're at to where it needs to be.
Oh, okay, yeah, we could add that.
Instead of putting it on the water.
Well, we ought to probably put both of them in there, right? We ought to just combine it and say, if we have a five-year goal to kind of restructure our modeling on the variable side, we should also then include, if council will help us, you know, help us, and we'll just, if we get a commitment to say, in 5 years, where how much of that fixed cost do we want to be recovering? Is it 100% or is it 50%? Yeah. And then we can model that in, and it'll affect this because we'll have a base rate that we know everybody will be paying, and it'll be increasing over the 5 years, and then we'll blend that in with the variable rate. And see, the variable rate helps us with just managing the usage patterns and making sure that there really are different users, and so that's what this is helping us to do.
If anything, I mean, we're in a desert. Yeah. At some point, the pricing of our water is going to have to reflect.
And that's what this
the
is
fact
trying
that
to do.
We're in the desert.
That's what this is doing more of.
Yeah. Good. Thanks. I look forward to seeing that.
Mr. Finter.
The only piece I would add, I do appreciate the transitioning because we made some pretty big steps with just starting this. There was a shockwave of phone calls, and so we are in a severe drought. I think what the takeaway that I have is that winter rye lawn is going to cost you a fortune in the near future, because it also affects your wastewater rates, because in the winter, that's when we estimate, and I've been chewed out so many times on that, just trying to educate folks that's how we do it in Mesa. Take the winter time. That's how you kind of get a wastewater determination or calculation. But is it in the most severe drought conditions that we've seen in recent history, is it okay to say if you decide to do that winter rye lawn, it's going to be very expensive for you and it has a significant impact on usage in the system? I think that's a fair thing to put out there right now in the circumstances that we're at. So that's the message I'll be taking back, is beware. But I do like, kindly, a little bit more transition, because we just don't want them showing up with pitchforks. So anyway.
No, we don't. Mr. Thompson.
And this kind of goes back to what Councilmember Glover was concerned with on the electric side, but this seems like for whatever the fixed income, low income folks would be saving on the electric side, they'd end up spending on the water rates. So there probably should be something looked at for those individuals as well on the water side to compensate for that.
Thank you, Council. Any other comments? Thank you very much. Is that, do you have more for us?
We'll finish it up real quick.
Yes, thank you.
Based on what we showed you today, with the phase-in of the 5 years, that result would be, as we had mentioned, a 5% increase would be the recommendation for next year. That would be across the board, service charge and variable. We'll obviously come back and show you some different options for those as well.
Yeah, so Candace, all these numbers on the back end, let's just skip over those and come back with the revised ones. Yeah, we'll just have to come back with the revised ones.
From the wastewater side, Councilmember Finder did look at that a little bit. That does not have that seasonality that the water has. It doesn't have the complexity that the water has when it comes to the rates. It's based on your water usage in the winter, and it's your three lowest months in the winter period that we designate. That right now also has that 5%. And again, but that may change based on whatever we find on the water side. They're kind of move together. We try to keep those together a little bit.
Is there any other models for evaluating that? Because we can't measure wastewater. We really have no
actually, that is the national standard.
That's the standard.
In all the times I've been doing rate modeling, it's that winter month is what determines your wastewater rate. That's pretty consistent across the country.
Thank you.
So we'll come back with some other ones. Just a variation of these. This would show you, if you come back here, just kind of the, as it sits today, what the monthly impact would be to the median home value. And those are the ones that you see on that homeowner comparison as one of the attachments. That's one of the things that we do each year, is look at the impact to that median home value, that standard family that lives in one of those homes. This would be a monthly impact. And we always tend to look at that each year. So we'll do the same thing when we come back with the alternate views here. We'd also make sure that we're looking at, because if we do increase the service charge, that's going to increase that impact to that median homeowner.
Light 34 real quick. But I think
we need to talk about this, because regardless of how we implement, what we were talking about is regardless, and we even go back to here, The targeted revenues, these are the targeted revenues we need for next year based on our estimated expenses that we're going to have. So regardless of how we implement those, as long as we hit these targeted revenues, this is really what our reserve balances look like for the enterprise fund. So remember, again, the enterprise fund, these are all individual utilities, but we look at them as one when we talk about financial management. And so we're forecasting, if we hit those targeted revenues for 15-16, that our reserve balance would be at the 11.3%. And you see it goes down a little bit, 11.3, we forecast 11.2, and then we forecast 10. What we're trying to get to is in 17-18 is when we kind of go back up to that normal debt service level. We've had a couple years here that our debt service is a little bit lower, and so we've been able to kind of back off a little bit. We want to make sure that we have the rates in place and the revenues in place when it comes to 17-18 to make sure that we continue that reserve balance going forward. And so that's why we kind of smooth those rates over time. And that's why you see it kind of go down to that 10%. And that's what we're shooting for. Our target is to make sure we keep that 10% out in 17-18.
Thank you very much. We look forward to getting the revised numbers and appreciate your taking our concerns into light and reevaluating that. Thank you.
Thank you.
Mr. Brady, any other presentations this morning?
I think that's enough for you this morning.
Thank you very much. Next item on the agenda, information regarding job order contracting projects. Council, any questions related to that? Next item, acknowledge receipt of minutes of boards and commissions. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye. Aye. Any opposed? Thank you. Next item, hear reports on meetings and or conferences attended. Council, any reports? I think we're all ready to move on to our next agenda item, aren't we? Mr. Brady, anything as far as scheduling goes?
Just quickly remind you that this Saturday, April 18th, from noon to 4 p.m., we'll be having a Celebrate a Mesa event at Pioneer Park, 526 East Main in LeSueur. So we invite the families to come out, everyone to come out. It's a free event, and we'll see council on Monday, April 20th. Thank you.
Great. Thank you. Celebrate Mesa is a huge deal. If you haven't been, you need to go. It's a great party. I think you'll see probably all or most of the council there. The next item on our agenda is to convene an executive session. It's been moved and seconded. All in favor, please say aye.
Aye.
We'll now convene an executive session.